Hi, today's May 6, 2018. This is Mobile News Podcast 253. I'm Todd Ogasawart, my good friend John Westfall. And as with many Mobile News Podcasts, we don't have a theme or main news item, I think.
Well, maybe we are all the theme that we need.
That's right, that's right.
Yeah.
So we'll start off with one that I have not run into yet because I haven't upgraded my Windows 10 boxes, including the one at work, which gets updated, you know, centrally and hasn't gotten the update yet. So the latest Windows 10 update, monthly update, apparently breaks a few things. So applications like Chrome, the Chrome browser, will freeze and lock Windows on occasion. Not for everybody, not all the time. But enough that Microsoft has admitted this is a problem, is working on a fix. So if you updated Windows recently and noticed some weird freezing behavior, try switching to Firefox or something, temporarily at least.
I have two comments and no more than two. One is I have not noticed this because I don't actually have Chrome installed on my Windows machines.
Wow.
And two, I thought we were supposed to get rid of that whole problem when we switched from cooperative to preemptive multitasking in the 90s. So, I don't know how hard this is, but it seems like for 20 years we've been trying to prevent rogue applications from bringing the whole system
I wouldn't call Chrome a rogue application.
Well, I agree this is probably more of a Microsoft figuring out how to make it rogue without it trying to go rogue. But it just amuses me whenever I see the whole operating system kind of brought to a standstill. Yeah, this affects every operating system that's in existence today. But it's just, this has been a known problem for a very long time, and we've never quite gotten a great solution for it.
Well, two comments about that. One is actually from our friend Sven Johansson, who in our private chats noted, you know, Windows ain't done till Chrome won't run. So that's one. And two, I also remember going to the 1999 Microsoft Developers Conference. I forget what it was called back then. But it might have been called the Developers Conference. Anyway, back in 1999, Microsoft's Windows product manager stood proudly on stage and told us, I don't know, maybe 100 and something of us. It wasn't a keynote. It was a session on Windows 2000, which was, you know, then coming out. Said, you'll be happy to know that Windows Update will no longer require you to reboot your PC. And I'm still waiting for that to happen, but
I'm still, you know, that doesn't hold a candle to the best Microsoft odd stage of all time, and that was the scanner being plugged into Windows 98 and then blue screening it.
I was there
with Bill Gates, with Bill Gates watching and trying to, you know, justify it. That was a good one.
That was a ooh moment. I was in the audience at the time, and we didn't have, you know, most of us weren't carrying around video recorders back then because we didn't have smartphones yet. Nope, no smartphones. You know, so no camera phones at all. And so do not have a video of that. Otherwise, I probably would have been videoing some of that.
Thankfully, a video does exist to this day. So.
Yep. Okay, so there's that. And next up is something kind of surprising since we've been hearing that the iPhone X is, you know, dying and not selling well. I think I may have even said that based on reading the experts, the pundits.
Yes.
So what and again, you know, you got to, I don't know who these people are. So there's a group called Strategy Analytics, and they claim that their sales tracking model, whatever that might be, shows that overall global year-to-year smartphone growth, and I have that in quotes, is -2.4%. So it's actually going down. Not too surprising. We've reached saturation. But the top six most popular models accounted for 1 in 7 of all smartphones shipped worldwide. And the most popular phone by market share was the iPhone X.
Yes.
It says iPhone X. It should be iPhone X. I just copy and pasted it from their thing. It's just iPhone X, but that makes no difference. It's iPhone X. The X is the 10. With 4.6% market share. And the next three positions, 8, 8 Plus, and 7. Not the 7 Plus. That's kind of interesting, I think.
Uh-huh.
So a smaller phone. Apple's combined market share worldwide in sales, it was 12.2%, which is, you know, not the giant Android combined, whatever it is nowadays, 80% or whatever. But pretty impressive, especially since they own the top four positions in the best-selling iPhones.
Yeah, I think it's interesting having watched this unfold over the last month. A month ago, based on rumors that were mostly out of certain suppliers.
Yeah.
So, you know, Apple's supply chain is huge, but these were two or three different analysts that were looking at what suppliers were saying to them about what Apple was ordering. You would have thought that the iPhone X was the biggest flop in Apple's history, and they were about ready to cancel it and say, we were wrong, we need to go back to what we've done with the 8 and subsequent iPhones.
Yeah.
Then, about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, Apple has their earnings call, where they basically say it's been the top-selling iPhone since it came out. So, and all of these analysts are going, well, how did we miss this, or how is this so wrong? And what I thought was interesting was when I was reading the articles about, you know, the iPhone X is going to be destroyed and killed and it's horrible.
Yeah, I heard it was going to be discontinued. I may have even said it on this podcast.
It almost seemed like those articles were giddy in anticipation of, look at this huge flop.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, we never said that. Don't ask us about it.
Right.
And I just think that's interesting psychologically that... Yeah. You know, I very rarely wanted technology to fail. I think that pretty much every piece of technology, including crazy things like the Kin and the Zune and things like that, I think they've all had redeeming qualities, and I would have liked to see them continue on in some way. But it's just amazing to me how some people's fanboyish nature, in a sense, or David versus Goliath or whatever it might be, complex, makes them want to see things burn. You know, the iPhone X is so big, it's so different. Everyone hates it, right?
Yeah.
It was a horrible idea, right? Even though in the intervening months since it came out, Android manufacturers have started copying it like crazy.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, the whole fan and anti-fan, I think we could call it the anti-fan group, is really kind of a fascinating study. And, you know, I think... I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if the sociologists and anthropologists of the world have done any, you know, academic research into this anti-fan and fan movement.
I don't think I've come across any, but it would be interesting to look at. It's interesting to me just that what I have in my pocket somehow annoys you regarding what you have in your pocket.
Yeah.
I've told people the only thing that's keeping me from having both an Android phone and an iPhone is that I don't want to carry two phones.
Yeah.
But I think there are great Android phones out there, and I'm happy with my iPhone. But apparently for some people, it has to be a one-party rule, you know, the device fascists of out there.
Well, you know, we've all run into our share of that, I'm sure. I mean, you know, the people, you're carrying a Windows notebook, and people go, oh, you're using Windows. Or you're carrying a, you know, MacBook Air, as I often do, and they go, oh, you're using a Mac, idiot. and of course, every now and then I carry a Linux notebook because I actually bought some of those.
And then they go, what are you carrying?
Yeah. What is that?
Yeah.
Is that a big Android tablet?
I had an interesting experience a few months ago. Someone looked at me and said, is that an iPad Pro? I said, yes. And they said, can you do any work on it? Can you actually do anything with it?
Yeah.
I get that. And I said, well, and I pulled up Word and Excel and PowerPoint and every, you know, all the other apps. Yeah, and it was, oh, I used an iPad 5 years ago. It didn't have any of that stuff. And it was an interesting sort of thing of, I've used it 5 years ago. I ruled it that it was a toy. And now I've just kind of gone with that belief for 5 years.
I'm trying to think if there was available on there 5 years ago. Ballmer was still CEO, so I guess it wasn't.
No, 5 years ago, when the iPad launched, you could make the argument it was purely a content consumption device. There really wasn't much in the way of doing real work on it. But over the last couple of years, there are things that are much faster for me to do on my iPad that versus my Surface Pro and other things I want to do on the Surface Pro. So for me, the way I work, the iPad's the best device to carry around with me all day on campus, whereas the Surface Pro comes home at night and stays in my office during the day, and occasionally it's in the bag with me, but it's all going back to what works best for you. But apparently, for some people, what works best for you shouldn't be working well for you.
Yeah. Well, if I don't like it, no, you shouldn't like it either.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a lot of things in the world that are non-tech, but we won't go there. But yeah, I don't know if I was surprised, because I guess I had bought into that whole thing, you know, about the iPhone X not selling and
when you mentioned it, I hadn't even really noticed it, and so I was kind of shocked when you said something about it. Yeah, because I thought, well, that doesn't. I mean, Todd's a smart guy; he must be reading something that I didn't notice. But
And then you saw the stuff I was reading and go, "What?"
I thought that was weird. And actually, about a day later, the earnings call happened, and the whole internet went, "Oops." I think it underscored just how. Because Apple is so secretive and the only leaks that usually get out are the ones Apple wants to get out, we forget that the news that we're getting from them is coming through this supplier that has 1% of their supply chain, called a blogger that, they're friends with and said, hey, Apple isn't buying as many of these chips, so they must be getting ready to discontinue the iPhone X.
Right. Your
chain of news.
Yeah, it's been kind of an interesting. And the other thing about Apple-ish is that I was surprised to see Warren Buffett or his company Berkshire Hathaway bought an additional $75 billion in Apple stock over the last quarter or so. So he holds I think over $100 billion in Apple, and Apple's about a $900 billion company, I think. Well, let me check. What's their market cap right now?
Apple. And aren't they buying back huge number of shares they're buying back, too.
Yeah. So Apple is currently, as of Friday, a $932 billion company in market cap. So he owns a little over one-ninth of it, something like that. I mean, he's a huge, huge owner in the stock. I suspect the Jobs estate is probably the only thing that holds more. But in any case... Moving on. This one I found kind of interesting, even though I don't use the app, I've heard of it. And that's Pocket Cast, which is a $3.99 iOS app. I guess it's available on Android too. I didn't look it up. I know it's on iOS. At any rate, the company behind it was bought by a consortium. And it's a kind of oddball consortium. It's not the usual... people you think of who invest in this kind of stuff. So they bought this mobile app, and they, being NPR, WNYC, WBEZ, which is Chicago, and This American Life, which is a super popular radio program and podcast. I found that kind of interesting that, this group of, I guess we'd call them nonprofit organizations would buy into this too. Because, especially NPR, which already has two mobile apps. It has the NPR News app and NPR One, which is kind of like a streaming app.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because it's obviously not a grab for we want a podcast app. It's obviously a grab for the audience.
Right.
So that's interesting what they plan on doing with this audience, because if they turn Pocket Casts into a look how great our content is and we're going to make it harder to find other content, or we're going to change it too much, people will just uninstall it.
Yeah.
So I'll be curious to see what happens to Pocket Casts, because there has to be some goal here to buy the whole company, but that goal can't be we're just going to limit it to NPR content and WNYC content and BEZ and This American Life content.
Yeah, and again, NPR, which is, I don't know what their share is in the company, but one-fourth of the four companies, NPR already has two mobile apps with kind of overlapping functions. I mean, they both do the same thing. They both stream their radio content as podcasts in two different ways. So adding a third is kind of unusual to me. My guess is NPR One is going to disappear. And Pocket Cast is going to replace it as that. Or one of the two is going to disappear, because it'd be silly to have three apps.
Yeah.
That with overlapping functions.
Unless that's NPR's goal, is to get as many apps as possible.
It could be. Do you use Pocket Cast? I don't. I've never used it.
I don't. I use Overcast.
Okay. I don't use anything on my Android device, so I was thinking of maybe taking a look at it there, spending a whole $4 to do that. Okay, and the next thing... Oh, it's actually a historical item, which you found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was 20 years ago today, as we record this on May 6th, so 20 years, May 6th, 1998, that the iMac G3 was launched. And if you're going, well, which one was that one? It's the one that you're thinking of. It was the one that actually had the colors, had the different the accessories that were designed for it. So it was a white and color scheme, right. All in one PC with turquoise, and then later all the other colors that they released for it. And then the keyboard had the same color scheme as the computer, and the mouse, little hockey puck mouse, had the same color scheme as well.
I think it's referred to as candy color scheme or something like that.
Yes. And so I thought this was interesting because prior to this, 20 years ago, computing hardware sort of looked a little dull.
Yep.
It really boxes. Wasn't. Yeah, there wasn't much form over function. It was all function. And this was the first time that form became important, it seems, or at least a company. And remember, Apple and 20 years ago. What?
And color.
Yeah, and Apple of 20 years ago was not Apple of today. They were not at that same, you know, rock the whole world. And at the time, nobody, you know, market share for Mac OS or OS X was not very large at all. So it wasn't a big company like they are now saying, hey, everyone should design beautiful looking devices.
Right.
But it was the kickoff of the new Apple era and the kickoff of form on par with function. Of course, some have argued that Apple went too far with many things with form over function, especially in recent years with the headphone jack and the notch and things like that. But at least it got the conversation rolling, and I think it's fun to think about how the world is different today based on us caring about what our devices look like.
And I'm also trying to remember if the iMac G3 was the first of the all-in-one devices. I don't remember what the Mac prior to the G3 was. Do you? The desktop? I don't remember.
You can make an argument that Macs were always all-in-one. You know,
that's true from the 1984 Mac, the classic Mac. Yeah.
You know, having a monitor built in with the same case that has the computer in it as well.
Right.
I don't know, Todd. Have you ever not bought a piece of hardware because it was just too ugly to purchase?
No, I've bought a lot of ugly hardware because that mostly everything was ugly. Right? When you think about it.
I'm just thinking about the last 10 years, 15 years. I think I care about form, and I like my things to look nice, but I guess I'm still an old computer person at heart going, as long as it works, it doesn't have to be pretty. But I wonder today how many people say, well, that's ugly. I'm not buying that.
Well, you know, I can maybe see that in the notebook form factor because you have to literally look at it all the time. But for desktops, the vast majority of time, whether it was a true desktop or a mini tower or a full tower, you kind of stick it somewhere and you never look at it again, right? Unless you have to put a CD or DVD in it. Of course, now desktops don't have DVD players, so you don't even have to do that. You just have to have enough room airflow for the fan, and it's kind of good. It doesn't need to do anything. By the way, I just checked, and Pocket Cast is available for Android, and it is also $3.99 there. Maybe I'll spend $4 plus tax of my hard-earned money and try it out on Android, since I really don't listen to podcasts on Android. Might be an interesting thing to do.
An interesting foray into... I've done that before with every so often going, I'll pay for it just to see it. Although, the rant that I have now, and I don't know how... I think this is a fairly new thing, and it annoys the whatever word you want to use out of me.
Yeah.
Are these apps that instead of charging you $4.99 or $9.99 or whatever once, want you to buy a subscription for $29 a year or, you know, to unlock their premium features that are primarily app features, not service features.
Right.
You know, pay the $30 a year and you can get different tones for this, or you can get different, you know, it's literally a software change. It's not an infrastructure back-end change where they are needing to support a service. That's starting to get really annoying, and I hope that we will not see that for very much longer. I think it's something that some developers are trying, and then when they realize no one's buying it, they'll get rid of that idea.
I don't have a lot of hope for that. I think it's actually working. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? But I hear what you're saying, and it is annoying. You know, but it's funny, you know, because in the old days, we would have called that shareware, and that was perfectly fine. But now we're in a different world.
But shareware wasn't, you know, buy a code that'll work for a year.
That's
typically
true.
Typically, shareware, you bought a license, and your license was perpetual.
Yeah. You're right.
And you got a steep discount if you bought just an extended trial or something like that. So,
yeah.
I have no problem paying for software. I just would only like to pay for the actual software once. And I have no problem paying for services that are on the back end and require upkeep. But when it's literally just you know, pay this and all of a sudden all these features will immediately be available offline to you because they're just built into the app, that's a little weird in my opinion.
Well, you know, two things. One, shucks, I can't remember. It was one of the, you might recall in the old, many, many decades ago, this predates you, but you may have heard stories that the large mainframe companies were referred to as IBM and the Seven Dwarves. You know, the dwarves being companies like Unisys and, you know, those kind of folks, Data General. And I can't remember, might have been, I won't say it a brand name because I don't remember, but one of the not IBM mainframe companies had a mainframe that the, you know, if you paid some exorbitant amount of money for to upgrade its processor speed, a technician would come, open a panel, pull out a wire cutter and cut a wire. Because that wire was essentially a no-op, which was slowing down the system. It was reducing the number of cycles you had available to you in a, you know, in a second. And so, you know, if you knew which wire to cut, you could upgrade yourself. You probably didn't avoid your warranty and stuff. But still, you know, this has been going on for a long time. The other thing is the rise of subscriptions, which is really bothering me. You know, and even the back-end stuff. Okay, like you said, I can kind of see that. But even Office 365, for example, where, you know, let's say, well, what if I don't want OneDrive and I don't want, you know, some of the other Outlook.com or whatever? What if I just want the, you know, Excel, Word, and PowerPoint, let's say? You know, why is it I have to pay X number of dollars per year, 70 or 100, depending on which personal license you get? So, you know, and he said, well, you can still buy the in standalone applications like Word for, you know, $400 or something. I don't know.
You're just bothered.
I'm just bothered. Yeah. So another Microsoft related one, by the way, or not another, but a Microsoft related item that came to that I noticed just before we started the podcast was, you know, Microsoft Build is starting this week, and I don't do much dev anymore, so. Yeah, I'm really not up to date on that. On most of their stuff, like the IoT stuff and whatnot, except as a concept. But I did notice two things that I found really interesting. And that is two of the sessions, well, I'll just read you the two session names. One session is named Building Scalable Web Apps and Self-Managed Database with MySQL and MariaDB, which is now owned by Oracle, I think. Used to be open source. I guess they're still open source. And the other is Building Intelligent Applications with Azure Database for PostgreSQL. So, you know, in the old days, seeing those three database products, a Microsoft Build developer type conference would have been, But now it's a thing. And it's a good thing, in my opinion. You know, I'm a huge fan of open source for enterprise. So really glad to see that. And for those who don't remember, if I remember correctly, so MySQL used to be an independent company. Got bought by Sun. Sun got bought by Oracle. I think they're still part of Oracle. MariaDB is, gosh, I can't remember what it is, but it's the same company.
Yeah, it's a fork of MySQL.
I think by the original creators, is that right?
That sounds right.
Yeah. And by the way, I should note, I pronounced it incorrectly. It's not MySQL like most of it. It's actually MeSQL. And I think I've told the story before, it's worth telling again. So I was at the O'Reilly Open Source Conference, God, well over a decade ago. And the two co-founders of MeSQL were there giving a talk about their database, which was then pretty well known. You know, I mean, we had a lot of people in the room, but wasn't, I guess it was huge. But at any rate, it hadn't been bought by Sun for $1 billion and all that yet. And so MeSQL, Me is, I think, one of the co-founders' daughter's first name. So it's not My, it's Me. And you might remember at the time they had another product called MaxDB. Uh-huh. And that was one of the other co-founders' son, I think. So it's Me and Max, not My SQL. And I assume Maria is yet another child of one of the co-founders. So anyway, it's Me SQL, not My SQL, even though that's how almost everybody pronounces it, except for the founders.
Yeah, well, I hate to say it, but if you've created something that's big, that other people you know it so well that they, you know, have... It probably runs a good chunk of the whole internet. Yeah. You probably shouldn't be sore about people mispronouncing it.
Yeah. They have appropriated the name. Last item in our podcast is, I just stuck it there, so John, I really didn't discuss it with John before, but
It was not clear through me.
Huh?
It was not clear through me.
It was not clear to John. Is that last month, April, was the 80th anniversary of the launch of Superman, who appeared in Action Comics number 1 in April, calendar month April 1938. I think the publication month is May, but you know how comics work. Anyway, so one of the things I found interesting is that in addition to Action Comics number 1000 being published, they also published a companion item, which it's labeled as a graphic novel, really it's a collection of essays and comics throughout the 80 years, called Action Comics, 80 Years of Superman, the Deluxe Edition. And what's interesting about it is that, generally speaking, the digital comics cost exactly the same as the hard copy comics, the paper comics. And that's expensive. Comics these days are like $3 or $4 per comic book. And that's a lot of money. But at any rate, this collection of essays and comics, Action Comics 80 Years of Superman, is, I think, $30 if you buy a paper version. But the interesting thing is, if you buy the digital copy on Comixology, which is now owned by Amazon, I think it was only like $10 or $12. Anyway, it's pretty less than half the price of the paper. And you might say, well, isn't that how it should be? You're not, you know, you don't have to print, you don't have to ship. Yeah, it should be like that, but that's not how it is. Comic book prices are the same digital and paper, as far as I can tell. You know, with the exception of sales and, you know, that sort of thing. So, at any rate, if you're a fan of Superman and you want to pick up this what they call graphic novel, it's really not. It's more like a trade paperback kind of thing. And you don't want to spend $30 and you don't mind not having a paper copy, you might want to go take a look at Comixology, or I guess that's probably the only place it is. But like I said, it was, what did I pay? $10? $12? Less than half. Let's call it less than half. And, you know, I haven't read through it yet. It's a pretty big trade paperback. I'm going to try to, let's see what the, how many pages it is. It is. It doesn't say. Oh, it's a hardcover. The $30 price is hardcover. So, okay, maybe it's worth it. But I think it's over 200 pages of content. So, you kind of get your money's worth either way. Alrighty. Let's see. I think that's it, John, unless you have something to add.
I think we have filled our time with a little bit of ranting, a little bit of raving, and a little bit of talking about design and comics.
Yeah. One last rant. My Starbucks app is still wonky. It did launch the last time I went to Starbucks. I don't go often. I go maybe once a week, sometimes even less frequently. But I went this past week, and it took, I don't know. I remembered to start the app up while I was standing in line, so I wouldn't be, you know, at the counter not being able to pay. But it took a while. I think it took like over a minute before it was actually usable. Really annoying. I tweeted at Starbucks about it. They said, oh, send us details, but not sure what they would do with that. I already said what
happened. Laugh.
Yeah, we don't care.
Just laugh at you.
We know you're going to spend your money anyway. All right, MobiViews Podcast 253, and we'll come back to you at 254 at some point. Talk to you all later.